Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup Pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
You may have heard me talk about Burt Nutrition before. My family and I started Burt Nutrition because of our collective passion for health and wellness and to help people lose weight and just feel better about themselves. Who doesn't want to feel better about themselves? So right now, I'm just going to take a minute to talk to you about our staple product, our grass-fed whey protein that's available at burtnutrition.com. We created a high-quality, healthy, pure protein supplement without an ingredient list full of junk. Our grass-fed whey protein is all natural, hormone-free. It has the nutritional components your body needs to build muscle and lose weight. So stop buying just any protein powder on the shelf, especially if it has a ton of ingredients you can't read. Our grass-fed whey protein is low-carb, naturally sweetened with stevia, and has 23 grams of power-packed protein in every scoop, and it tastes amazing. Whether you're looking for a nutritious snack or a meal replacement with one of our awesome shake recipes, which include apple pie, pumpkin spice, and cinnamon roll, just to name a few, or you just want to include more protein in your diet, which we all need, try our great-tasting grass-fed whey protein. We have vanilla and we have chocolate, and it's awesome. Use the code SCJ15 for 15% off right now at burtnutrition.com. Use the code SCJ15 for 15% off today.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's
awesome.
Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's, so
that's awesome.
Awesome.
Oh, awesome.
That's awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stephen B.
Bradford Anderson, what is going on, brother?
Dude, we have a guest today that I'm so excited to talk to you because I have said maybe two or three words to him in my life. And so I'm excited to get to know this man because he has been such a great addition to our show.
Yes.
Our show is nothing if we don't have a good adversary for you and Sonny, because otherwise
Yes. It's
just you and Sonny peacocking around with nothing to do. And that's not interesting
that's
to watch.
That well, sometimes it is, but most of the time it is not. And there's nothing better to have a quote unquote bad guy who is an amazing actor come on and actually be a real threat to Sonny Corinthos. And I've been trying to track this guy down for a while. Jason has and Steve has, but we finally did. And he's so gracious to join us.
Oh.
Jeff Colbert, thank you, brother, for joining us today. This is amazing.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me. This is fun, and you know, and it also helps to ameliorate the feeling of that everyone hates me.
Oh,
my character. Yeah, I was in the middle of it. I was about to start a scene, and I can't remember who it was, but someone just turned to me right before they counted down, and they said, "No one likes you, do they?" The whole of Port Charles, no one likes you.
Was that your acting partner just trying to like get in the place for the scene, or was it?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Well, so a little bit of this before it starts.
Just a little bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Cyrus needs anyone to like him.
Apparently not. It's,
yeah.
We have a name for that. It's called a sociopath.
Yes, it is. Well, you're doing an amazing job.
Oh, God, thank you for saying so.
We'll get to the General Hospital part in a little while, because we want to talk to you about kind of how this all came about, your whole career. And We find it so fascinating, because I was going over your resume and I'm like, holy crap, this is the true definition of a working actor. Mm. I mean, it's truly, it's amazing. It's, I mean, I, I was so inspired by you before. And then I saw all these credits and I'm like, man, this guy has, he's been in the trenches and doing this for 40 years, you know?
Yeah. You know,
and not just that, but a consummate artist, a musician, a fine artist. Like, we're so excited to learn about your creativity and where that came from and how you manage it all. So I read that you're from Montana. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Outside of Billings.
Your whole formative life, all your youth was in Montana?
Except for the misspent bit. Well, I had a lot of misspent youth in Montana as well. But I was born and raised in Montana, grew up on a farm there. Worked there off and on, went out on the road. I graduated from high school at the beginning of the 70s, and there's you could still hitchhike then. And so I hitchhiked around for a couple of years. I worked in a carnival on the road. I was,
What? Wow. What did you do with the carnival? What kind of carny were you? That's exciting.
I sold corn dogs. Corn dogs. I had a joint on the corner of Bourbon and Iberville at Mardi Gras. We did the Southern Circuit, the winter circuit.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you're selling corn dogs at Mardi Gras, is it people that just need to absorb alcohol, or is it just people? I mean, so like, I'm sure you had some characters come up to you.
I took a Polaroid. Remember Polaroids? I took a Polaroid of two men dressed as women in sequined bikinis. And they were these beautiful black men out in front of my joint, and I just had them pose for me. And my father would bring that out whenever anyone would come home. He'd say, "Good looking, aren't they?" And they would go, "Yeah, they really are. They're men." You know, farmer humor. And also, we sold corn on the cob, and then we would dip it in margarine. And some guys came up and said, "That's real butter?" I said, "Yeah, of course it's real butter." And I gave it to them. They took a bite. This guy took a bite and said, "That's margarine." He threw his beer at me. And there's a thing, if you're ever in trouble as a carny, you say, "Hey, Rube." And immediately you're surrounded by guys holding various weapons and they're ready to take your part in things.
Wow.
So we tracked this guy down. Kiko had a little hammer down by his side, and DA had
Does that still work?
Knuckles. Huh?
Does that still work?
You know what? I don't know. Hey, Rube, I haven't been in a carnival for a while, so I'm not sure if it works.
Next time I'm in trouble, I'm just going to try it.
I do know that throwing a beer on someone in Mardi Gras is assault. And we got a cop the cop was going to take this guy in, but I let him go when he started crying. So.
Hopefully Cyrus will feel the same way when Sonny starts crying. So.
I remember my step-grandfather would never eat margarine. He said that's to grease wagon wheels. It's not to consume. It's to grease wagon wheels.
I like your step-grandfather.
Yeah. So he would never eat margarine. And I appreciate that. So,
all right.
In your youth in Montana, did the idea of getting into the arts ever occur to you? Or was it either stay here and farm or get out and do anything else?
You know what? It was, I kind of got run out of town. It was a really, really, really small town. And I was just, various things happened and I was no longer I couldn't really build a life there. And farming is so, so, so hard. It's really hard. And so it was get out, but I didn't know get out and do what. I was really damaged as a kid. I had no idea what I was doing or how to do it. And I didn't believe I was deserved to have life. So that was really hard for a few years.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. I didn't know where I was going, but I knew where I couldn't be. And it was there. So I left there.
Yeah. And so hitchhiking. I was born in the 70s, but and hitchhiking was always something we were told not to do.
Yeah.
And I thinking of a time when it was not just a kind of acceptable, but like a reasonable way to see the country. What a great, like, I mean, in the best of circumstances, in the worst of circumstances, you probably get murdered. But in the best of circumstances, you meet a lot of great people and get to go lots of places. That's so neat.
And actually, the New York Times just had an article yesterday or the day before. There are three new books out about hitchhiking.
Yeah.
And, you know, it became a craze when On the Road was published.
Sure.
And it was still safe in the early 70s because we didn't have quite as many serial killers then. And people were willing to let you into their lives. And, you know, you would travel and there was no, you know, there was FM radio was just beginning. There was no such thing as a podcast or internet or anything like that.
Sure.
So you needed to be entertained over long distances. So you'd pick up a hitchhiker and talk.
You know, that's crazy because my dad, he left Indianapolis when he was 18 and he hitchhiked to L.A.
Wow.
He just knew that he had to get out. Same thing. He was like, I'm out of here. This is not for me. I don't want to be a factory guy. I don't want to work at a car factory. I'm hitchhiking. I'm going out to L.A. and going to try whatever it is.
Did you grow up here?
I grew up back in Ohio until I was 16. And then I moved out to live with my father here in California. So. But you know, I think that's just so cool that you're like, hey, I know I don't want to be here, so I'm going.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. You know,
and what amazing, you know, unbeknownst to you probably, but amazing training as an actor to come across so many different characters working at a carnival, so many different characters, like your Rolodex of interesting people must be very deep.
I've met a few. I've been a few myself. So.
Oh yeah. Sure. At what point in that your kind of journey in that did you realize? Well, let's go to LA and see what's there.
Well, I came to LA. I followed a woman to LA, and I was not an actor then. I was a trombone player, and the first time I was even close to. Seeing actors or being near actors was I played in the pit orchestra of Fiddler on the Roof at the University of Montana, and J.K. Simmons was the conductor. And I watched these people on stage and I went, oh my God, because they were having these emotional experiences right in front of me. And I was in awe of this. But growing up in Montana at that time, you weren't exposed to the world the way you are exposed to the world now. And so I thought that there were people and then there were actors and that there was no crossover between the two. I didn't know that people could be actors.
Sure.
I don't know what that means, but that's how it appeared to me. So I came here, followed this woman. She was an actress and she never really was able to do anything. But I had some adventures. I went to work my first and last and only time in an office. I was a temporary paralegal for a Get Here company. They were being sued. Remember that there was a brief moment I was in college and going to class made sense. And I just said, I need to go to a class. And this woman suggested an acting class. So I went to the acting class and suddenly, you know, it was like this place where I had all this emotion inside and they said, yes, we want that. Mm. So it was like being really big and discovering football, like, oh, this makes sense here. You know, yeah. I went to an acting class and they wanted all this emotion as, oh, this makes sense here. So that's how I started it.
And once that kind of dawned on you, how did the practical side work out? I mean, I'm sure, you know, obviously it's a very different process then than it is now, but you know, how did you take steps towards that?
Well, I studied for quite a while and, okay, so again, I was really repressed. I was really inward turned. I was really dark. I was really in a lot of darkness inside. And so you go to acting, you start opening that up and really working with like the Meisner kind of approach. And so all of this starts coming out and then you have to find where to put it because you haven't had it. And, you know, so it was, I did probably 5 years of 4 or 5 years of study without very much work at all.
Wow.
Because I was just trying to, you know, manage all of this.
Sure.
And so I just kept studying and, you know, and eventually just started, you know, trying to put myself out there.
Well, isn't it funny, like, you know, doing those kind of exercises and doing that kind of work and then feeling that freedom to express that stuff. And then you go on a film set and they're like, all right, do less.
Yeah.
So that's a challenge, right? Like, I imagine, because, you know, I in terms of the characters that you've played, you know, you can play, you know, you can play a very outward villain or you can play a very inward villain. And, you know, there's interesting things to both. So, you know, I'm curious about, like, you know, finding that freedom and then kind of massaging it into what people need, you know?
Well, you know, I just to hear you say that, I remember Victor French was a director and an actor who worked with Michael Landon. And Highway to Heaven, a two-part Highway to Heaven, was my first big guest star role. And
oh, wow.
It was this guy, he was called the Monster. He had a big birthmark on his face and he didn't show himself to anybody. He lived in, you know, alone and started to come out. So it was really me. And Victor French, like, I had all this emotional life that I had built or lined up for the character. And then Victor French just started giving me permission. He knew how to, he recognized me and he started giving me permission to have that and to be that. And
oh, wow.
And it was like, it was like, you know, water to a man dying of thirst, you know.
Sure. Did you have speaking of thirst, once you started getting into the business of it, did you have a sense of what you wanted to achieve? Did you have a passion for success, or was it just like, I'm here, I'm doing this and it's feeding me? And do you know what I mean? Did you have an attack? Like, I'm just curious about your frame of mind when you started, I guess.
You know, I thought, you know, at that time there was still very much a distinction between TV actors and film actors. Mm. And, you know, and people, when I first started, people actually hired you because you were the best person for the job, not because you had the most Twitter followers or,
imagine
or
that.
The, you know, and it was, I mean, it was, it really was this, it was before the, you know, the suits really took over the studios and there was a lot of independent movies being made. And what I really wanted was a career in, you know, I wanted to be lead in, you know, independent film. That's really what I wanted. And then it, you know, and then what it really becomes is, you know, who'll hire me?
That's sure,
what, you know, sure. It's really just give me a job, man. Just let me act. That's right. What really progressed to. But at that time, you know, I had a friend, Roy Call or R.D. Call. He passed a year or so ago. And, you know, he came up at that same time. He did a lot of Sean Penn movies and worked with Chris Walken a lot and all these guys. And he wouldn't audition. And he wouldn't do TV, or he held on to some idea what he was supposed to be. And he ended up moving to Utah and never working again because people were just like, well, if he's not going to read, we don't want to. You
know. Yeah, that's a little crazy.
Yeah, so it is. It's a little extreme, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, and so I, okay, you know, the thing about acting to me, the whole career, I find it to be one of the most profound spiritual practices, because every actor to some degree gets into it because of the need for approval. Mm-hmm. Then you get approval, and if you're wise to any degree, you notice that there's not enough of this to give me what I need from it. There's
sure.
not possibly enough approval in the world. So then, is there some other reason for me to be doing this? Okay, yes, there is. Then working to find out what that other thing is and to align yourself with that other thing and to progressively let go of that need for approval is where it really, it's really just a powerful practice and an extraordinary way to make a life for me.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. The thing that, we talk to a lot of actors and, the feeling of freedom that comes from treating each audition, treating every experience in the business as being an opportunity to either enjoy your craft or share your craft versus the attachment to the job, right? And I think that's the detachment from that part of it, that I'm present in this moment and I'm having this experience and that's why I'm here, and that the opportunity to have that is enough.
Yeah, exactly. No. Whether it's in a casting session or on the set of anything,
right?
A big movie, General Hospital, anything,
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, working with Michael Landon, did you get to work with him a bunch?
Oh yeah, I did.
What was that like?
Well, he was an extraordinary cat. He built this world, and he had. He had crew members that had been with him from Bonanza.
Wow.
Bonanza, Little House on the Prairie, into a Highway to Heaven. And he never fired anyone. There were people he didn't ask back, but he never fired anyone. And so he was aware of, what it was like to be in this business. And he was aware of how difficult it was. And he believed in the experience of family and in the experience of, he believed in, having loyalty.
Yeah.
So I loved working with him.
Well, it's funny, looking at your resume, we could talk about every credit
you
did.
I know.
What was it like to work with so-and-so? What was it like to work with so-and-so?
Yeah. So Jeff, when you started kind of rolling, you got Highway to Heaven, you started getting more jobs. What was it? What job was it for you that you said, okay, I'm on to something here, instead of maybe just one guest spot? What was the job where you were like, hey, I think I could have a long career now?
Well, not long after that Highway to Heaven, I got the villain role, the third lead in a Columbia motion picture called Out of Bounds with Anthony Michael Hall.
And it remember that movie.
Supposed to be Anthony Michael Hall's first adult role.
Right.
Right. And Richard Tuggle directed that. He directed Tightrope with Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Directed that and wrote, he directed this one. It was his first sole directorial project. And that one, I thought this is what I wanted, and it also it terrified me. It really did terrify me, because suddenly if there's nothing there, you're going to be exposed.
Sure. And, well, it probably terrified Anthony Michael Hall more. The pressure was on him, Jeff, not you.
Yeah. Well, I was so blinded. I couldn't see anyone else's experience at that point.
Yeah, that's true.
Self-obsession is a real, just a real hard thing to have to walk through the world with. So, and that's where I was at that time.
So at that time, when you did the movie, you said, hey, this could be a big movie. It's a studio film. And
I thought, and then shortly, not long after that, I got China Beach, and that felt like this is my thing. And it was a series, and it was
humongous series, by the way. Let's not just say it was just a series, because it was, I remember how big that was. I remember the commercials for that growing up. It was crazy.
It was important in culturally, because it was the first time that people were really dealing with veterans coming home. And
right,
20 years after the fact. For a lot of them, but everyone was. It was the time that healing was beginning on a culture, socially, on a social level, and we got to be a part of that. But even that, I came through the back door. I was a guest star in the pilot, And then they realized, oh, we don't have any soldiers in this. Let's bring that guy back.
Amazing.
Let's bring that guy back for 60 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Something
like that. 57. It's getting cold again. And the best way to keep yourself warm this winter, two words, heat holders.
That's right. Friends, I'm wearing them right now. Heat holders make the warmest thermal socks around. They keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks in the coldest conditions. And right now in Sacramento, which is not known for its cold weather, it is 45 degrees. That's chilly.
Well, that's freezing, according to my wife. That's freezing.
That's right. And the great thing is, no matter where you are and how cold it is where you are, the thermostat feature lets you choose which pair is right for you. The originals, which are the warmest, the lights, and the ultralights. The originals for max warmth, 7 times warmer than regular cotton socks. Lights with a thinner profile for casual situations and sports shoes, or ultralights for the thinnest profile and everyday wear with dress shoes. But still, 3 times warmer than regular cotton socks.
There you go. And you know, I'm about to go on vacation to someplace very, very, very cold.
Mm-hmm.
And the heat holders, because I got the thermal, I got the pants, I got the long sleeve shirt, I got the gloves, I got the socks, and I got the throw blanket.
Oh, so yeah, dude.
We're taking it all with us on vacation. This is gonna be amazing.
Have you put on the hat yet?
Yeah, dude, it's hot.
Oh my gosh! It keeps the heat in. Well, it feels like one of those old, like the way it feels on your head. You feel like it should look like one of those old Russian things. But it's just a regular. It's just a regular cap. It's just a regular hat. But it feels like it should be one of those. But perfect gifts for Christmas or just to give yourself comfort and warmth. Great for home, work, and play. So go to heatholders.com and use code AWESOME for 15% off. Make yourself warm with some heat holders. Go to heatholders.com, use our code AWESOME for 15% off, and you can receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more.
Sweet. Come on, go to heatholders.com. Heat holders.
Making life warmer. Today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. It lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable.
That's right. HelloFresh offers convenient no-contact delivery, which I just got, to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family.
I know, we talk about all the things that have changed in our lives, and, you know, sometimes the grocery store is a nice break from your home, but as we're getting into the cold season and people are, you know, wanting to stay home a little bit more, not just to avoid the bad weather, but avoid the COVID, isn't it nice when great food shows up at your door?
Well, not only that, it's just you can enjoy cooking with your family and get dinner on the table in like 30 minutes. Instead of going to the grocery store, you get huge value. You save 40%. 40% when you use HelloFresh versus shopping at the grocery store. So come on, man. This is a no-brainer.
The cool thing about HelloFresh, there's something everyone will enjoy. Sometimes as little as 20-minute meals. And if you want low-calorie, vegetarian, or family-friendly recipes, they have that and more.
And you can change your delivery days, your meal plan preferences. You can skip a week. Whatever you need to do is right on the app, and it's really simple to do. So
yeah, you can really make it.
I definitely recommend it. Yeah, giving HelloFresh a shot in your home with your family and making some dinner, because let me tell you, it's good food.
We got
some meals that we cooked.
Yeah. Yes. Do you have a favorite?
Oh man, the sesame beef tacos, dude.
Yeah,
or it was
really
unbelievable. Sesame beef tacos, first of all, I love tacos. Sesame beef tacos. And it had kind of these pickled veggies.
Yep.
Almost. And it was so good, dude. And it was a little spice, which I'd like, just a little heat.
Ooh, a little sriracha.
Chili flakes in there. And sriracha cream, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was little chili flakes in there. And it was awesome. I loved it. Well, me and my daughter, me and McKenna love the spice. So we were just give us all the beef tacos.
What was your favorite? Well, I was a little nervous about that for my kids because they do not like spicy things.
So I went with
I love getting the HelloFresh box because I show the kids the recipe cards, and they pick the one that they're most excited about. So they pick the cheesy smothered mushroom chicken with mashed potatoes and roasted carrots.
Well, how can you go wrong with those combinations?
Well, and what I love about HelloFresh is that since everything is pre-measured and pre-portioned, it's really easy for the kids to help. Because it's totally. You know, they feel like they're a part of the process, and that makes dinner time even more of an experience. Gosh, so mashed potatoes, roasted carrots, and my kids don't love mushrooms that much. My wife doesn't love mushrooms that much either. But I thinly slice them, and the gravy was so good. And then
he doesn't love gravy.
My wife's a vegetarian, so I gave her a they have vegetarian options too, but for this we just ordered a family pack. But I gave her like a fake chicken patty and put the gravy and the mushrooms and the melted cheese over her chicken patty.
That's awesome.
And so she went crazy for it, and I'm so excited to make this one again. Anyway, guys, we got you an amazing deal to try out HelloFresh.
Yes.
If you go to HelloFresh.com/Awesome90, the word awesome90, all one word together, or use code awesome90 at checkout, you get $90 off.
And how is that possible?
Including free shipping.
That's amazing.
Yes, go to HelloFresh.com/awesome90, use code awesome90 to get $90 off, including free shipping.
This has got to be one of the best deals we've ever had, for sure.
Yes, so try it out. Make your life easier. The holidays always get a little crazy. So get some great food. Have some great times with your family with HelloFresh.
Hey, guys, try HelloFresh and let us know what you think.
Yeah, that was what? I guess about three seasons or so, right?
It was three and a half, I think. The first season was the pilot and six. And then there was three seasons after that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And you know, because I remember it too. So in my remembrance, I would have thought it would have gone on a little bit longer. What was the end of it like?
At that time, they were looking at numbers and they wanted to get their numbers up, and they replaced us with Civil Wars. They had changed our time slot. Do you remember Civil Wars? No.
No.
Yeah, it was a series. Mariel Hemingway was in it, and it was two divorce lawyers who were divorced.
It wasn't actually about the Civil War. I was going
to say. No, not at all. We weren't having the numbers that they thought they should have for that time slot.
I see. So, right.
It was a drag. It was, we weren't done telling stories, but
sure,
they were done having us tell stories.
Had you gotten used to, like, oh, I'm a regular on a TV show. This is going swimmingly well. This is going to go on forever.
It was a drag when it ended, because then I didn't know how to get a job. I didn't know how to, so it was, and you think about actors, most actors, I mean, having a gig on like a TV show now, you're going into work 5 days a week. That's so rare for an actor.
Right.
Most actors, if you're working, sort of like being a baseball player, if you could hit every, 33% of the time, you're a superstar.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And it's kind of the same with actors. If you're working a third of the time, that's amazing. So, and most actors aren't. So I became one of those guys.
Right. But you still were able to piece together. Do you remember what came after China Beach, that because you did get on a roll again? You did find that.
Yeah, I did. But there was some time in there where I worked for my mechanic as a driver for him. I was a taxi driver. Here's what happened a lot. I would look for a bartending gig.
Yeah.
And I would be literally rolling coins to buy gas to get to these. And I'd go interview with these guys and go like, yeah, you'd be a good bartender, but you're just going to get a job and leave. No. I'm committed now, man. I'll make it work. And I remember one poor guy, I visited him like five or six times, just please make me a bartender. And he said, okay, come in on Friday. And on Thursday, I got a a movie. And I said, sorry, man. You know, but that happened over and over again. And I, you know, because I believed in the need to be moving forward.
Sure.
Be moving forward, whether it's bartending or driving or acting, you got to be doing something, you know.
So during those downtimes, what satisfied you artistically? Was it music? Was it
staying in class? Was it?
I took class. Yeah. I got into photography. And you know, some music, but I'm really not a very good musician. I'm a good singer, but I'm not a very good musician.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've played guitar for 40 years without ever really learning how to do it.
Well, no, I saw you played a country singer. And so there's a lot of images of you looking very successful with a guitar in your hand, but that was just from the show, I guess.
I was really good in that too, man. I did that. And then I also did a pilot called His Wives and Daughters, which was I described that character to my son, and you know, he's someone who was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and he was trying to make amends to all of his wives and daughters, and he had many of them, and just married a 25-year-old woman, and I described it to my son. And he said, "Well, Dad, that's you."
Thanks, son.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Thanks, pal. Well, it's funny because when you said when you talked about your first role in Highway to Heaven, you said the same thing. So like, you've played a wide array of characters. Have you found a consistency in the characters that you get hired as? And if that's the case, what is the through line there in terms of how you connect to it?
Well, you know, I get hired for a lot of heavies.
Sure.
You know, I think because I lived in a darkness inside for so long, I'm familiar with darkness. I don't know how someone is a sociopath, but I know how to assume that character. You know, and it's like, you know, it's like you don't have to shoot heroin to play a heroin addict. You don't have to be a sociopath to play a sociopath. But I've had to accept enough dark things about myself that I can do those characters without judging them.
Right.
You know, and that's why I think I'm able to do that. And there's this, I'll tell you what I learned, I don't know, somewhere halfway through to here, I learned that it's, you don't have to play a bad guy. In fact, it's not even just, you don't judge this guy. You play your deepest, most perfect self and let the circumstances describe to the audience who you are. I did this Law and Order SVU where I played the leader of some cult and I had a 12 and a half year old wife. I was going to birth the new Christ with her, and I was responsible for the death of about 23 children who were, you know, and I just played myself as a man of God.
Sure.
And I didn't play like you know, creepy pedophile child murderer. I played a man of God. And when I had these scenes with Mariska Hargitay, I was like, oh my God, you were raped as a child, as a young girl. That's why you do all this. Oh, this is so terrible for you. And I was just being like happy guy on the set. And then I watched it. After 3 minutes, I had to leave the room because it was so creepy.
Right. Well, I mean, they always say that
creepy.
You know, evil people don't think that they're evil. Only in Inspector Gadget do they think they're like, right? Do you know what I mean? It's Inspector like Gadget, human bad guys.
Right.
Human bad guys don't do these bad things because they want to be bad. They think they're doing something.
They have a justification for it. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing.
And we'll get to General Hospital in a second, but I have one other question to ask you, but when we're doing scenes at GH, this guy never loses his cool during the scenes. Like
I've twice now lost my cool.
Well, not with me in the scene.
Not with you. No, with you guys. No, because that's a different thing.
Right, right. With in front of Sonny and I, he's always super cool, right? And you never see him crack. And I think it's so amazing because most actors who come in who play the heavies do the exact opposite. They get all huffy and pigeon chested, you know, like day one. And we're like, this isn't going to work at all.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So it was interesting that you brought that up, but going back to your kind of evolution of an actor and these characters that you've played, what has been the most uncomfortable character for you to play or something that you had to stretch yourself the most?
There was a movie called Beauty Mark. I played a pedophile, and it was this girl that I had molested from the age of 5 to the age of 15 or something. And she came to me as a young woman needing money, and I was going to help her out. And it was so well written that I couldn't say no. I turned it down, and then the guy talked to the director, and I read it, and I'm like, God, this is so good. I have to do it. And that's the one thing I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. And I did watch the movie once, but I'll never see it again. But Auden Thornton is the actress in it. She has been on some series recently, but she's just this extraordinary actress, and we got to work together, and it was an amazing experience. And again, I had to play it as a love story.
Sure.
You know, she happened to be a young girl, but it was a love story, and I believed in the love that we had. That was the hardest one to do.
Hey guys, this episode is sponsored by Dear Friend, the only subscription that delivers full-size self-care and wellness products straight to your door. This is a box of happiness, always full-size, always fabulous. That's FabFitFun. How does it work, Bradford?
Well, so you start by picking one of the many items you get in your box, and then you sign up for just $49.99 and get 8 to 10 products all valued at over $200. After checkout, you can customize the rest of the box and then come straight to your door. You know, shopping is fun, but shopping looks different this year. And
yes, it may
for the foreseeable future. So not only has this been a great service for a long time, but now it's kind of really suited to the moment.
It totally is. The customization is awesome. Choose from a variety of products to customize your very own box. You want to be surprised? Sometimes I like to be surprised. I just get the box and it's awesome. Not only does FabFitFun give you a great product, you got a great community. Over 1 million women agree that FabFitFun is awesome.
That's right. And you know, it's funny, we've been working with them for almost 2 years. So we are well versed in the FabFitFun world, and you know, it's funny. This product that I got in the fall editor's box, they're full size products, so you don't blaze through them. And I found this in my medicine cabinet. I was like, oh right, it's the Tarte Drink of H2O Moisturizer. And you know, as it's getting colder, my skin is getting drier. That's kind of how it works. So the Tarte Drink of H2O Moisturizer, it looks like it will be heavy, but it goes on really light. It has a slight smell of citrus to it. It is so nourishing. I wanted it to, you know, my skin absorbed it, and I wanted to put the whole jar on, but I thought that might not be so great. So guys, we're getting into the winter box. The winter box is available right now. Sign up. You want to sign up now so you can snag amazing products like the Vera Bradley Compact Organizer. Everybody loves Vera Bradley. Or the Kate Spade New York Rise and Shine Stud Earrings. There's a set of two little pearl-looking ones and little diamond-looking ones. Super sparkly. You know, Kate Spade is always fun and fashionable. Use our coupon code, That's Awesome, for $10 off your first box. It is truly amazing that each box is only $49.99, because any one of these items in the box could cost more than that. So to get 8 to 10 items in each box, that's like if you were to buy all things separately, it would cost you well over $200. Getting that for $49.99 is astounding, but with our code, you can get it for $39.99 by going to fabfitfun.com and use That's Awesome for $10 off your first box. That's awesome. All one word. Go to FabFitFun. Treat yourself or someone else awesome.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Ready to get away from it all? Free yourself with Pluto TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No contracts, no subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android or iPhone and start watching now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
Talking about those things that you discovered in yourself, has there ever been a role that required you to put those on a display in such a way that it was either that like you had to be careful not to go too far or found yourself dangerously there or something? Do you know what I mean?
Well, there was a movie called The First Power with Lou Diamond Phillips and Tracy Griffith, and Bob Reznikoff wrote it and directed it, and it was about a satanic kind of worshiping serial killer. It was based on Richard Ramirez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Night Stalker.
And he was actually, on trial while we were shooting. I went down and watched him on trial. And Bob Reznikoff had really studied a lot of deep, dark shit to do this movie. And I went into it with him, and I went too far. You know, my first scene, I have some woman staked out in a cave in Griffith Park, and I'm reciting the Lord's Prayer backwards as I'm cutting her clothes off.
Oh, gosh.
And it's like, don't try this at home.
Oof,
yeah. It's not, you'll pay a price for it. I've never been on a set where more people were injured. The producer... Yeah. Fell down the stairs into my arms, broke her ankle. You know,
oh my gosh!
Several stunt people were hurt in this movie. It was really dark.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Well, I looking through your resume, seeing Sons of Anarchy, seeing Walking Dead, seeing there is an inherent violence in some of the stuff that you've done.
Yeah.
But with those kind of shows where you know it's going to be there, can you create more of a distance from it? Or
do you do something to counteract it?
Yeah.
For those sorts of things, it's, you know, like The Walking Dead was fascinating because you ask yourself, what would I be willing to do if it was the end of the world? And if you needed people together to survive, and if you were an alpha male and gathered people around you, how would you? And I wouldn't do that or do it in that fashion, but I really understood that, and so it made sense to me. It made sense emotionally and intellectually, and so that, and then you don't really deal with.
Well, that stuff is so far off, it ends up being more technical than anything, right?
Well, no, but it you don't take on the fact that you're actually killing somebody.
Sure.
You know, that's just, you can't take that on.
Well, of course.
You wouldn't be able to, work.
Well, and you had a pretty grisly finish in that show, I think, right?
Well, they bring me into, I had to be so bad that Andrew Lincoln, because he had tried to be a pacifist the whole season.
Yeah.
And I had to be so bad that he would give up pacifism.
Right. Yes.
Right. In a very, yes. Honestly, I haven't watched that show, but I read.
And then he bit my throat out. I'm holding him like this, and I say, what you going to do now, sport? And he bites my throat out.
Yeah, that's something.
That's serious. Let me just throw in a thing here. That guy taught me so much about acting. He's one of the most committed, supportive, full-on actors I've ever worked with.
Andrew
he's there
Lincoln,
110%,
yeah.
Whether he's working or not. And the whole cast and crew follows that lead.
Amazing. Just
like, no complaints, no babies, you know, no assholes.
It's well, wouldn't like, that be a joy to the world if that right? was
it? Right? It was like such a treat. That was a gift to work on that show.
Wow. Because I remember when I started seeing previews for it, I'm like, that's the guy that played that had the signs on Love Actually.
Love Naturally. Actually,
he is this like he plays the best friend to Keira Knightley's husband in Love Actually, and he's the guy that comes to her door with the Sharpie on the sign saying, you know, tell him it's Carol Singers, I actually love you. But it's this like so sappy romantic thing, and I was like, oh, that's the British guy from Love Actually. He's a sheriff with monsters,
and crazy. A great American accent, just yeah,
right,
yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Really
they always do those Australians and British. They do us pretty well.
They do us well.
Yeah. Yeah.
In every sense of that word. So
that's true. So Jeff, how did this opportunity at General Hospital come about for you?
You know, my manager called me up and said, I don't know if you'd be interested in this, but there's this thing and there's, you know, I thought maybe I'd put you up for that. What do you think? What the hell? Yeah.
What did you feel about daytime before that? Or did you ever audition for it before? No,
I did. My very first AFTRA job was, I think, it was either the Days of Our Lives or the Young and the Restless. I know I did one each of, I did two, I did like three day jobs on soaps, where I was the bartender or the, you know, the bodyguard or, you know, the waiter or something like that.
Sure.
And the first one allowed me then to buy a SAG card.
Sure.
So I was grateful for it. And there was a casting director who was known for casting the under fives. And, you know, and I did I don't know if they still do this, but they did, you paid to do a showcase,
sure.
Oh yeah.
So I did a showcase scene. She brought me in for something. I read for it, got it, you know, and did it. And then it was like, you know, like I thought that soap acting was different from acting, you know. And I thought, you know, it's not for me, you know. And but then, you know, then I looked into there. You know, Elizabeth Taylor did General Hospital, for God's sake, you know, and. And you know, and my manager, Lisa DeSante, she put me up for it and they bit, and, you know, and so I came in and I got to tell you, I'm just having the time of my life, man. I'm having so much fun. I can't tell you. The first day I was working, I had like, I don't know, 20 pages of dialogue, and I'm in prison and we finished like the third scene where we just take it once and we're good, take it once and we're good, take it once and we're good. And I didn't realize I was on mic, but I said, this is fucking nuts. And so, the whole crew cracked up because they were listening to me.
Yeah. Is that when you were on the phone with Sonny?
It was, yeah. Cause it was just, I'm like, I'm in there, I'm, you know, and he's intimidating. Maurice, he's intimidating, and so are you. You guys, like you hold a look, and it's like, oh my God, there's some shit going on there. I don't want to mess with this guy. And so I'm like, you know, I'm the new kid on the block. I'm in there, and I'm like, you know, I'm gonna. I don't know who my character is yet. I'm still trying to work it out.
Right.
And I'm trying to be tough behind bars and in my orange suit and it was. It was something. And I was just, you know, I was just trying to get through it just to find my way through it. But, you know, after a few days, I just really started enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead, dude. Go ahead.
Well, so clearly memorization is not an issue.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Or because, you know, some people that come from single camera that aren't used to carrying that amount of dialogue in a day, it, you know, it takes a long time to just get past that.
Yeah.
And so that's not an issue for you, obviously.
Well, it doesn't mean it doesn't take any work.
Trick.
It's, right. You know, it's the thing for me, the challenge is to learn it so well that I can leave it alone.
Sure.
Because if I just survive,
Yes.
A scene?
Yes.
It's soul death. If I find myself doing something that I hadn't planned, if I surprise myself, then I get juice from that. You know, I get
of
like,
of course. That's an interesting thing that you just said, Jeff, surviving a scene, right? Like I picture, well, when I went off and did some single camera stuff, movies and TV shows, there was no surviving a scene because I had time to know my stuff backward and forward and walk on set. Yeah. Sometimes with our show, if you're working 5 days a week and you got 20, 25 pages a day, there is a bit of survival through through some of the scenes. Yeah. Have you ever experienced survival before?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you mean on this show?
No, outside of the show. Like this, you're thrown into the fire here. I mean, when was the last time that you did 100 pages in 5 days?
Never.
In your career? Never.
Come on, man. Never.
Never. Yeah.
Never. But on this show, there was one day, that my first over 30 page day.
Woo.
I was talking to two women, and I'm still trying to figure out people's names. And I would like close my eyes and put my head down as a way of like, I'm really trying to say something to them, but I'm just really trying to remember my lines.
Yes.
And they were like looking at me like, can he do it? Can he do it? Oh, and then we would get down.
Hey,
like,
hey. That's okay. That's a little trick Sonny uses too. You'll be fine.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, yeah, when he remembers the line, he shouts it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
He'll be like, thank God I remembered it. It's so funny.
That's what's fun about working with Maurice is that he plays in such an undefined area sometimes that as a partner, the listening and responding is so real.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
and you better
you
listen.
Just,
you better, better listen.
Li- well, you
oh,
better
that's
listen.
A gift when you have an actor like that.
Totally.
I did a play with Brooke Adams and Leo Penn, Sean Penn's dad, years ago. It was written by her sister, Lynn. And after the intermission, I had a scene with Leo Penn. And he would have a couple of scotches every intermission.
Uh-oh.
Our scene, all the important points came out.
Sure.
All the things that needed to be said were said. None of it was the dialogue.
Amazing.
And so I would have to just listen and listen and listen to know how to respond to him. It was my favorite scene of the play every single night.
That's exciting because you don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know what's going to happen. And you're I think it's going to work out. I hope it's going to work out.
Isn't that element, that whatever that is, that spontaneity, that whatever, that exists in our genre, like in almost, I mean, if you have a good scene partner and that you trust them, even if you don't and you don't trust them, it's so spontaneous that you're kind of on the edge of a cliff all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
And that's fun.
Yeah, it really is. I just I really enjoy it when I'm able to find that spot.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the one thing about coming in as a character like this on a show like this is you don't get a lot of information, right? You get your audition scene. There's no script analysis. I mean, you can, you know, look at the scene, but you know, you're not going through a script with people talking about your character or a lot of background. And especially for when you want to create not just a mustache twisting villain, but like a fully fledged character, the work is not just in the first day. It keeps going, right? And finding,
yeah, because they're figuring it out as they go along.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was doing a scene the other day and I decided how I was going to do it. And Frank came down and he took me aside and said, I got to tell you something that's going to change the way you're doing the scene. And took me over in the corner and he told me that who this person was to me that was brand new information. I went, sure. Oh, seriously? And I think it was a completely different scene.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm talking to someone who I have a relationship with that
sure.
I wasn't aware of until he told me.
Yeah. So, and what's great because, you know, the good and bad, I guess, is that you never know what who your character is. But the good part is with a guy like you, Jeff, because you're such a great actor. And by the way, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you.
And we just welcome someone like you to come in and play a heavy, because it's so fun to watch and so fun to act with you. And being that, saying that, the writers are also now writing for you.
Yeah, they're right.
So like, they see you, they go, this guy's awesome. And now we're going to, now we know who this guy is because Jeff's bringing something to it that maybe we didn't think about, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Now you made it three dimensional for them instead of two dimensional, which is.
Yeah. That's what they said, that they're writing now because it's, I was supposed to die some time ago or something.
Well, so was this guy up here about 12 years ago.
No kidding.
And that's the great thing about the process of, especially our show. You know, I can't speak to how other shows work, but it does, the collaboration, even if it is not completely conscious, right? Like you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to inform this building about the, you know, like you're just doing your work.
Yeah.
And, but it ends up being a collaboration and that's really cool.
It really is. And yeah, I'm just really enjoying it. And they're so gracious in like, they pretty much let me do what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you bring 40 years to the table. So at some point,
that's something
people have to have a little wisdom and go, oh, maybe we'll just let him do what he wants.
Right.
So, man,
hey man, it's such a delight to visit with you, and having you on our show is a real privilege. So thank you.
Thank you guys,
I will love to kill you, but I hope I don't.
Oh, well, thank you. I keep trying with you.
I know.
The last time I told Frank, I said this just makes me look inept.
Well, trust me, I've been there for 25 years. If there's, You're I've the killed a lot of people, killer. But I've been inept. A lot also.
A lot.
So you got to kind of just own the ineptness.
Yeah,
totally.
Right.
So,
right.
Jeff, amazing. Thank you so much, man. This has been a great conversation. We appreciate you, man, so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Really a pleasure.
Okay, friends, we have a very different kind of sponsor for this episode. It's called The Jordan Harbinger Show. It's a podcast that you should definitely check out since, well, obviously you're a fan of high quality, fascinating podcasts. So is my interesting people.
Yeah, the show covers such a wide range of topics through weekly interviews with heavy hitting guests. And there are a ton of episodes that you're going to find interesting. Since you're a fan of this show, I'd recommend our listeners check out. He has a lot of great guests, Jordan. There's Mark Cuban, Tony Hawk, which was an awesome one.
What have you listened to, Brad? Well, because, you know, we talk, we're both enthusiasts of the true crime genre. Yes. So he sat down with Amanda Knox, you know, who was the college student that was accused of killing her roommate in Italy.
Amazing story.
And the saga that unfolded, and, you know, I mean, unbelievable. I know we've kind of, you know, we've all heard a lot about that story over the years, but hearing it from her perspective was truly fascinating. And Jordan has an incredible way of, his interviews are so insightful, and people feel so comfortable with him, and it is an amazing listen. So you can tell there's a variety of guests. There's truly an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. I mean, the show covers stories like how a professional art forger somehow made millions of dollars while being chased by the feds and the mafia. But he's also done an episode all about birth control and how it can alter the partners we pick, or how going on or off the pill can change elements of our personality. It's all over the map.
Yeah, the podcast covers a lot. But one constant is his ability to pull useful pieces of advice from his guests, which he can do. I don't know. He's like a magician. I promise you, you're going to find something useful that you can apply to your own life, whether that's an actionable routine change, which, you know, I love, that boosts your productivity, or just a slight mindset tweak, which I love also, that changes how you see the world.
Yeah, we really enjoy this show, and we think you will as well. So search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everyone. This is Jillian with Court Junkie. Court Junkie is a true crime podcast that covers court cases and criminal trials using audio clips and interviews with people close to the cases. Court Junkie is available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.